Welcome to Good Money Moves, the show where we share financial tips and advice to help you feel financially empowered. My name is Jenna Tauble, AVP of Marketing here at First Alliance Credit Union. And with me today is Christina Kovacevic, our AVP of Retail Experience. So happy to have you back with us today.
Happy to be here.
Before we dive into our topic today, which is all about overcoming common financial fears that people have, why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourself and your role here at First Alliance?
Perfect. So as Jenna mentioned, I'm the AVP of Retail Experience here at First Alliance Credit Union. So my role strictly focuses on member experience and how we treat our members, things that we can improve on, such as processes and procedures, because times are always changing. So we look to update those whenever we can.
Yes. You are a busy person.
I sure am. And I'm excited about this topic because an unexpected expense happened to me recently. So.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah. We'll dig into that. So stay tuned to find out what happened to Christina recently. So financial fears, I think money is such a scary topic for so many people. And so that kind of comes about in a lot of different ways and a lot of different scenarios for people that kind of elicits these concerns and often very valid concerns that people have when it comes to managing their money. So today I'm structuring our conversation a little bit different than we have in the past. I'm going to talk a little bit about a specific financial fear, and then I'm going to ask you to tell our listeners how they can address that fear in their life. So first one that I have on my list today is the fear of not having enough money. So kind of that living paycheck to paycheck, it feels really like an endless cycle for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So maybe talk a little bit for our listeners about some strategies that someone can use to kind of break free from this pattern and really try to find some financial stability, regardless of what their paycheck size is. I think there's always things that we can do to try to address that feeling of, never having enough money.
Yeah, I think that no matter how much money you make, my dad told me this, and I feel like it's very true. No matter how much money you make, if you don't know how to spend it, you'll never have it. So that has always stuck with me. But one thing that I feel like I have done over the years that has helped me, is really try to be intentional about where and how I'm spending my money. So I've sat down and I've, looked at my, statements at the end of the month, and I will highlight in different, colors. If it was an actual bill or if it was just me going out to eat, or if it was a vacation. And then it just prioritizes things for me a little bit different because then I see where my money is going. Mm-hmm. One of my biggest things I spend money on is coffee. I am a huge coffee drinker. I have no problem buying 3 to 4 cups of coffee a day at any coffee place here in Rochester, which I know is huge, is a huge expense for me at least, $8, $9, $10 a drink. Like I could buy a whole meal to cook at home for my son and I. So, limiting myself to just a couple days a week and then finding different alternatives that I can drink in the meantime, like a V8 or something else. Mm-hmm. It was super hard in the beginning, but, when you see that you didn't spend, $30 on just morning coffee, you're like, oh, I can do this. Like, I can get this or I can get that. Or, so I think it's just being financially aware of where your money is going. I think that's one of the biggest things.
Yeah. I really like that you kind of bring it into the perspective of, it's okay to buy those things.
Yes.
If you have the budget available to buy that, it's okay to treat yourself every now and then, but being just mindful about how much you're truly spending on that in relation to other things that might be a priority for you can really help alleviate that feeling of, I'm struggling to get from, next paycheck to next paycheck, and just really being thoughtful and considering, if you only have so much coming in, how do you prioritize where that money's going based on how you're spending it? And because to your point, one thing that I've always heard and has stuck with me is you spend where your priorities are.
Yes.
And if you realize that where you're spending isn't what your actual priority is, you are going to feel really misaligned in how you're managing your money, and it's going to feel really stressful. So I loved your answer for that.
Thank you.
The next one is a big one that, I think at some point in time, almost everybody, I feel like, has had this experience at one point in their life through either something, you know, whether it's no fault of their own, right? Losing a job is a huge, huge financial blow when that happens. So how can someone really be more financially prepared for the potential of unemployment? Because you just never know, you know, if you're... place of business closes, or maybe you work on contract basis and you are between contracts. Like, there's all kinds of reasons why you could be unemployed at any point in time. Mm-hmm. So how can people be a little bit more prepared for that potential in their life?
Yeah, I think it's going back to the first question that we talked about, was just being more mindful of where you spend your money. And then also, I've heard, which I think is, I believe is true, to have at least 3 months worth of your salary saved, mm-hmm. In a savings account, because it might take you a couple of months to find that new job. So knowing that you have that security blanket, mm-hmm. To at least cover your bills for the next 3 months, definitely helps, if something unexpected like that was to happen.
Yeah. So having that, yeah, that emergency mm-hmm. fund yep. in place and really planning ahead and proactively putting money aside every paycheck to prepare for, you know, those types of situations. Mm-hmm. Because to your point, I mean, sometimes you'll find a job right away, and other times it could be, you know, 6 months or more, depending yep. on what kind of expertise and field. And if you were to have to move somewhere for another job, that's always an expense that yes. isn't always necessarily covered by another employer. So these are all things to be really mindful of. And hopefully you never have to dip into your emergency fund for something like a job loss, but it's a reality that a lot of people do yeah. have to deal with.
And especially in this day and age, I feel like, too.
100%. 100%. So that the third fear that I think a lot of people have is a little bit along the same lines, but not quite as dramatic, maybe. And that is, like, just having really unexpected large expenses come up in life that they're just not ready for, or there's no way they could have planned for such a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and it can really derail even the best financial plans when something like that happens.
Absolutely.
So what's maybe the best way to prepare for these types of unexpected expenses without, like, completely derailing your normal budget?
I think, again, we go back to, like, that mindful way of spending, having that emergency fund. I know no one likes to tap into it, but just putting one thing that has also helped me that I wanted to share is I have multiple checking accounts. So mm-hmm. I have a checking account for my loan or for all my bills. I have a fund checking account, and then I have that emergency fund as also a checking account, because I want to be able to pull out that debit card and use it if I need it. Mm-hmm. So I think also breaking down where you plug your money in every month, I think definitely helps when those emergency funds are needed to be used. Mm-hmm. And I think we talked about this in a few podcasts ago, not dumping so much money in there that now you're having to pull, and now it becomes a habit, like, oh, I pulled this month just $50. Mm-hmm. Now I can pull another $25. So really being realistic with how much you can put in there. I think we talked about before, some months you might be able to put $100 in there, and 1 month you might be able to put $50 in there. It all just really depends, but any small amount that you put in there is going to continue to add up, and that balance will continue to go up and up. So
yeah, and I really like the tip that you gave about kind of even structuring your accounts to provide you for those different scenarios, mm-hmm. right? A general savings, an everyday kind of checking account, and then maybe one specifically for that emergency fund. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you're using a checking account for that. I really like having a money market account for that, right. Just because it does earn a little bit more interest, and then I can still pretty easily access it if an emergency comes up. But having that money kind of separated out within my banking account really helps me understand how financially prepared right. I am for those scenarios. Mm-hmm. Because if, you know, I have to pay out, you know, money to cover an insurance premium or something like that, you know, $2,000, well, that's going to come out of, you know, my savings, because I'm kind of prepared for those. Are the right. types of things that you can kind of expect you might have to pay throughout the year. But, you know, for something like your washer or dryer going out, mm-hmm. those are some pretty large expenses, and that would be something where I'm like, oh, I better tap into my emergency fund. And being able to see that clearly what's available yes. is so helpful.
Or having someone steal your phone.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. That's what happened to me this weekend. Yeah, I actually had someone steal my phone, and I went into my cell phone provider, and $920 later, I have a new phone. But I will tell you, for a moment, I'm sitting there and he told me $920. I'm like, I could charge this on a credit card and I don't have to worry about it and I don't have to pull from my emergency fund. But I'm like, but that's what my emergency fund is for, is for this expense. And so it was a tough pill to swallow. But looking back and just, you know, over the last couple of days and thinking about that, I'm really glad that I used that, because now I'm not earning interest on that $920.
On the card.
On the card at, who knows, 22 to 30 some percent. That's an expense I don't have to worry about now. Mm-hmm. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Which actually, that story leads me right into my next fear that I want to talk about, and that is being overloaded with debt. Like, that is a huge concern for a lot of people. Not only they're afraid that it's going to happen, but because they're actively in it, mm-hmm. and they're just not sure, like, how are they ever going to get out of this? It's really overwhelming when you have all this debt sitting on your shoulder, like, and you're not even sure that you can manage to pay it off, especially with those higher interest rates. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, there are definitely cards out there with interest rates up to 30%.
Yeah.
Which is insane. So if somebody is in this, like, kind of a debt overload situation, it's really stressing them out. They're really worried about how are they going to get this under control. What are some, you know, first steps that someone can take to start to gain some control over and really understand the debt that they're dealing with and start getting it paid down?
Yeah, I think I have been in this situation, again, printing off that bank statement, maybe for a few months, and kind of seeing what kind of trend you're creating for yourself, and how much more you can put away in that emergency fund or plug in towards a credit card with a high interest rate. Mm-hmm. I also think it would be, you know, with those credit cards being at such high interest rates, it wouldn't be a bad idea for you to come down to one of our locations, and see if we can do some debt consolidation, maybe on a personal loan. Mm-hmm. There are other options that we can do, you know, maybe some cash out on your house if you own a house, or, maybe cash out on your auto loan if you have enough equity in it. So there are different options that we can, plans that we can put together, that would be more feasible, where you're able to pay that debt off a little bit faster. One thing that I feel like worked for me is, you know, credit card companies like, oh yeah, here's a $5,000 line of credit. You don't have to take that. You can actually call them and you can say, hey, I want to drop my limit down to $1,000. So then that way you only have a little bit to spend, and sure. It's not like, oh, I have $10,000 here, so I just keep swiping. And the next thing you know, you're maxed out, 30% interest rate.
Yeah.
You're never going to get out of that if you continue to make minimum payments.
Mm-hmm. And I really like that you brought up that just because you have, you know, debt in, let's say, credit cards, for example, doesn't mean that you can't refinance mm-hmm. that into something that's a lower interest rate and is a structured repayment mm-hmm. plan. Because I think a lot of times what people struggle with is if they have all this debt on a credit card, they're maybe still using that credit card mm-hmm. while still trying to pay down that
right.
debt. And that is just like an endless cycle that you really can't get out of.
Yep.
So doing something like a debt consolidation to a personal loan is really beneficial, because not only does it typically come with that lower interest rate, mm-hmm. but then you have that fixed repayment timeline. So you know exactly what your payment's going to be, and you know that it's going to make a dent
yes.
in that debt. And you can start to see that wiggle, you know, move down further and further in that balance,
yeah.
which in and of itself can be really motivating to see that happening.
Absolutely. And I think with, you know, some of those different refinance options, you end up paying, you know, you consolidate so much and you end up paying less than what you would have paid if you made a minimum payment on all of the things that you have.
Yeah.
And I always tell members, whatever you were making as far as the payment to those credit cards, you can actually make that payment and have the rest go towards principal. So mm-hmm. it's paying it off faster, because most of the times when you make that payment, it's going towards interest.
Yes.
To those credit cards. They're paying themselves first before they pay off your balance. So when you consolidate, you can take that extra that you would have been paying, apply towards principal, then interest, you're not paying so much in interest and you're paying it off faster.
Yeah. That's a really great mm-hmm. point that the credit card companies do like to pay themselves
yeah,
first.
They're like, yeah, we are important.
So my next fear that I want to talk about is kind of along these same lines, and that is around credit scores. People, a lot of people just don't truly understand mm-hmm. credit scores, and so they get a little bit fearful about truly what their score means and how it's going to impact, you know, mm-hmm. the type of loans that they can qualify for and, you know, all of that stuff. So especially when it comes to like that low credit score, because it really does limit a lot of your financial opportunities in the long run. So what are some, you know, maybe actionable steps that people can take to raise that credit score before they go seek out a loan or a credit card so that they aren't stuck in a cycle where they're at that 30% interest rate on a card?
Yeah, so one thing that I love to share is that you can go out on myfreecreditreport.com and they will actually send you one free credit report to your house. Mm-hmm. So I actually do that every year. I have an app that I use that I check, but it's nice to get that from the credit bureaus. And I go through that and make sure that, number one, all of the information that's on there, any open credit that I have, that it's actually mine. And I just look at, you know, have I been making payments? What is my current balance? So that's the first thing I do. Second thing I do is I look at my credit card utilization, percentage. So easiest one is, let's say you have a credit card for $1,000. You do not want to spend any more than 30% of that $1,000 on your credit, because as soon as you go over that, your credit card utilization goes up and then your credit score goes down. Mm-hmm. So I think that's another big, big thing. And credit scores are all over the place. I had a car payment, or my first car, I paid it off and it dropped my credit score 64 points. I'm like, what? I thought it should do the opposite. But in reality, the credit bureaus are looking at not only the balance and the utilization, but they're looking at the payment history. Mm-hmm. So for that 72 months, I'm making on-time payments every month. So that's actually raising my credit score. Well, now that that's paid off, that's gone. So that history is gone. Mm-hmm. So that's what dropped my credit score. It wasn't for long that it there, but it definitely, I was like, well, wait, now if I want to go get a vehicle, another one, what's my credit or what's my interest going to be because it dropped my credit score? Yeah. And then lastly, credit bureaus, they like to see, an installment loan, a revolving, so like a credit card, maybe a personal loan, a mortgage, and an auto loan. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of people don't have that. So you work with what you have, make those on-time payments, don't spend any more than that 30%. And then also the one thing that I don't think people know. So I have a credit card that I've had since 2011.
Sure.
I am never, ever, ever going to close out that credit card because, again, it's that history that's there. So every time they try to raise and like, oh, you have $3,000. I'm like, nope, bring it back to $1,000. That card I use so it keeps that history, but never close out your oldest line of credit because that's what's going to keep your credit score higher. Mm-hmm. If I was to close that out, I can't even imagine what would happen to my credit score.
Yeah. That length of history is mm-hmm. a key component to what makes up your credit score. And along with that utilization, mm-hmm. like you were talking about, it's a huge component. So kind of, it's a balancing act.
It is a balancing
and
act.
And sometimes it's really hard to know, to your point, what's going to affect it positively and negatively until you see it for yourself and kind of, and everybody's situation is different because everybody's mm-hmm. credit mix is different. Everybody's, you know, credit limits are different. Everybody's situation is just so different.
And some things you can't control. So you might check your credit score one day and it's X, and then you check it a few days later and it's X. Some of those things are out of our control because some creditors report at the beginning of the month, some report at the end of the month. So you never really...
It's a moving target.
Yes, it is. Yes.
So the other thing that I want to talk about before we wrap up today is a fear around falling victim to fraud, which I'm thinking about this as you're talking about checking your credit report, because mm-hmm. that is one really good way to detect if you've fallen victim to fraud mm-hmm. or somebody's stolen your identity, is things are going to show up on that credit report that don't belong there and they don't belong to you. So what are some, obviously you can't protect yourself 100% from everything, but what are some proactive things that, you know, people can do to prevent themselves from, you know, falling for a scam or falling victim to fraud?
I love talking about fraud. I don't like when members have to deal with fraud, but I love talking about it because I like to share the knowledge that I have. So I think the most important thing that you can do is have access to your online banking and your mobile banking. That is the quickest, fastest way for you to see if there's anything that is not something that you charged on your account. The credit report, also, your financial institution, not here, not anywhere, is ever going to ask you for your full account number or your full social security number. We already have that information in front of us. So making sure that if you do get the calls or email or texts, do not click on anything. The best thing you can do is if you're getting those messages is to call your financial institution and speak to someone who works there where they can verify that information. We are never going to send you a text message saying that you have fraud. Click on this link. Never, ever will we do that. We might send you a text message like, hey, we've detected something. Please call First Alliance Credit Union. Mm-hmm. And from there, yes, but we actually just dealt with people. Fraudsters have been going out and spoofing numbers. Yeah. They've spoofed our number. They've spoofed police station numbers. Yeah. So I think if you feel like, and trust yourself, trust your gut instinct. If something doesn't feel right, it's probably not. And you can always hang up and you can go onto your app or go onto your computer and look up First Alliance Credit Union phone number. And it'll give you the correct phone number and you call us and we'll make sure that you're taken care of.
Yes. Yeah. That is really great advice. And we are at time. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
This was such good information. And thank you for tuning in. Make sure that you subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or YouTube right here. And if you want to learn more about how to overcome financial fears, make sure to visit our website at firstalliancecu.com, where you can subscribe to our blog and even listen to past episodes of this show. This has been Good Money Moves, and until next time, stay financially empowered.